Education and Career Readiness Policy and Finance Committee to order. Welcome. Good to see you here. First order of business, the minutes. Read them quickly. And someone to make a motion.
I make a motion to move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative Whalen. Any comments, questions, discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the minutes from March the 7th, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. All right. We have a couple of bills today that we're going to hear about. And should be an interesting hour and some minutes. You'll have as much time as you need. Representative Albright, would you like to begin by moving your two bills?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move both House File 3639 and House File 3644 before the committee for discussion.
All right, welcome to you, and you have got some guests. Do you want to start, first of all?
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you, and then I'll introduce my guests, some who have traveled a far way to join us in a conversation about, I think, one of the most pressing issues that faces not only the state of Minnesota, but our nation, and how we as a organization can lead our state into what I think is a leadership position in the cyber technology and cybersecurity industry within the nation itself. So with that, I thank you for the conversation we're about to undertake. I'd also like to thank the bipartisan support that both bills have received from this committee and others. I'd like to make special note of the fact that Representative Pawlowski is on both bills. And I'd like to thank him for sharing that vision that I have and others for making the state a much more secure place for the data that we all mine and use on a daily basis. With that, I will be brief in my remarks only because I think you will benefit more from hearing from my guests rather than me. And so I will just share a little bit. So we have a challenge in this state. Minnesota's cybersecurity workforce has the exciting and challenging mission of protecting information technology systems and networks from sophisticated adversaries, safeguarding sensitive data, and securing our critical financial, energy, healthcare, and transportation infrastructure. However, the current supply of cybersecurity talent does not meet the increasing demand within the state. Recent industry reports project this shortfall will expand rapidly over the coming years unless Minnesota strategically acts to expand the cybersecurity workforce pipeline. To compete in the 21st century economy, Minnesota needs a strategy to meet workforce demands in cybersecurity. It must be emphasized that cybersecurity is vitally important to all citizens of Minnesota. During the next 5 years, cybercrime will become the greatest threat to every person, place, and thing in the world. Some projections from the CSO Online suggest cybercrime damages cost are estimated to increase to $6 trillion annually by 2021. Cybersecurity spending is estimated to exceed $1 trillion from 2017 to 2021. Unfilled cybersecurity jobs will reach 1.5 million by 2019. And Mr. Chair, just by way of reckoning, I think that's less than a year away. Human attacks surface to reach 4 billion people by 2020, and up to 200 billion devices will need securing by 2020. Every one of these will impact Minnesota citizens, our government, our institutions, and our corporations. The inadequacy of our cybersecurity infrastructure means that Minnesotans will suffer economic loss as well as cyber predation. We are not alone in this endeavor, but unfortunately we are not at a leadership position right now, and you will hear from those people that can speak very well to that point. With that, Mr. Chair and members, My first guest and testifier is Mike Wolbrink, and I will allow him to introduce himself and present to you some information about our endeavors both with 3639 and 3644.
Thank you. Albright, I could say you have got our attention, so.
I intended to.
Okay, thank you. So, again, testifier, tell us your name and then proceed.
My name is Mike Wolbrink, and I am a I run a service-disabled, veteran-owned small business in Eagan, Minnesota. We've been focusing on cyber for several years now. I have a long background of military intelligence and other things, having been a airborne ranger with two combat tours, working in some very highly secured areas in the past in missile defense and other areas. My first trip to Israel was about 25 years ago, working on some ultra-classified projects, and I found that those folks have continued in their excellence and expertise in different directions. My current focus is employment of veterans. We have Azul has several different companies, including the Azul Foundation, and our focus is putting veterans to work and making sure that they have excellent training in order to do that. We have helped hundreds of veterans a quarter achieve economic empowerment of one way or the other, and we're actively involved in the community. We currently have about 100 veterans that are in cyber courses at Metro State University, and I really like to give them the best training that that we can possibly give them in the world.
All right, thank you. I guess we can entertain questions whenever someone might have one. Otherwise, we'll just continue testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, for the benefit of explanation, there are two bills before us, and I will just avail you of information about each one of those. 3639 is actually an appropriation that we're requesting for the Career Development and Workforce Readiness Program that is already underway at Metro State, for the very specific reasons that Mike has just cited. But that being said, much like wanting to pitch a tent, you need to have first a tent. And so with that in mind, 3644 actually goes to the bricks and mortar objectives of actually building out space that is already dedicated to a CISO at Metro State for the benefit of both the cybersecurity programming that would take place there, but also for the training and workforce readiness for those veterans and others across the state from the various entities that we'll describe as well that would benefit from that training, both in the public sector as well as in the private sector. So with that being said, I would like to introduce two members of this presentation team from Metro State. They can introduce themselves and their responsibilities to the institution, and then make presentation of the observations that they have made as we have moved these initiatives forward.
All right. I don't know who's going first, but please give us your name and then proceed.
Sure. So my name is Cal Swanson. I'm the Dean of the College of Sciences at Metropolitan State University. And I'm going to give you a little bit of background on, first of all, why now for this particular initiative, and then also why Metro State is ideally positioned for hosting what we view as fundamentally a institution that is not merely from Minnesota State, but rather something that will benefit the entire state of Minnesota. So when we look at cybersecurity nationwide, as Representative Albright already mentioned, there is a tremendous demand out there for positions. Currently in Minnesota, there are more than 5,000 cybersecurity job openings. Those job openings are paying an average of $90,000 per year. For every 10 openings, and I was just with the CEO of a cybersecurity company this morning, for every 10 openings, there is one qualified applicant. This is becoming a very serious issue from the overall protection aspect of things and also from the workforce development end of things. Minnesota traditionally has been a state which has been viewed very positively in terms of our higher education capacity, our education of our overall force. We are in competition in this business with states who are moving very rapidly into this space. If you look nationwide, there have been a number of very significant investments in cybersecurity training and capacity. You know, states like Florida have invested $20 million in 2014. Georgia just announced a $50 million investment in a cybersecurity training initiative, the University of Augusta, this past year. Minnesota at this point in time is not remotely near the top 10 of states, regardless of whether you look at it in terms of overall employment, if you look at it in terms of the activity of the startup economy. If we as a state do not get active in this space, these jobs, very high-paying jobs that look forward into the 21st century, will go to other places. And this is going to happen over the next few years. In other words, the winners and losers are going to be sorted out as we go forward here. So, and again, a very powerful article, actually, in the Twin Cities Business Magazine that I pulled up, talked about Accenture wanting to hire 400 new IT workers in the Twin Cities area. And this was in the February 6th edition there, but questioning whether there are actually 400 IT workers by 2020 that they are actually going to be able to hire in the Twin Cities. When you start reading news stories like this, this is, in my view, a canary in the coal mine that's saying our companies are going to start looking elsewhere to locate their high-tech jobs, their cybersecurity jobs, as we head forward. So when we look at the overall issue, cybersecurity is a very, very complex issue. It is very much a living issue in the sense that it's not a problem that you can solve. It's something that is continually evolving, new threats, new attacks, and we'll hear a little bit more about that as we go forward. But when we look at what an institute along the lines of what we're proposing, the Men's Cyber Institute, which has already been initiated at Metropolitan State, would accomplish. First of all, it would bring a sense of unity to the entire state of Minnesota. And what do I mean by that? I'm a business person wanting to hire an individual with cybersecurity background. I want to know what I'm getting, what that person knows when they walk into the door. So over the past year at Metropolitan State, for the benefit of the entire Minnesota state system, we've garnered $1.1 million in federal and state funding for the development of Pathways curriculum that will impact our education system all the way from kindergarten to the master's degree level. We want to build a system where we're all collaborating. All these pockets of excellence that we have within the Minnesota state system, the University of Minnesota, our independent colleges, are collaborating to build an ecosystem that functions for the good of the entire state. The second thing is that clarity, a statement from the state itself that this is an important issue, that, and this is what investment speaks to, that Minnesota takes this issue seriously and is looking to position the state for economic viability as well as the broader societal impacts that might come from this. And then finally, just looking at the workforce development as a whole, we are running currently a program that's seeking to serve veterans and underrepresented individuals in cybersecurity, in particular focusing on women who have historically not been represented well in this. We put this training out. We got funding from the National Security Agency to put this training out, and we had 350 applicants thus far for 80 slots for this. So there is a crying need for unemployed people, underemployed people who want to transition their careers into this, again, very well-paying area, and also then for those who need to be upskilled in one form or another. So this past fall, we launched the Men's Cyber Institute at Metropolitan State, and that's a collaboration with the Minnesota State IT Center of Excellence, again, speaking to the fact that we are looking to build a resource not for Metropolitan State, but for the entire state of Minnesota. We have first-mover advantage in this. We have, as I've said already, secured somewhere north of $1.5 million in federal and state grants to support our programming. We've also signed a joint venture with Elbit Systems of America to bring the first cyber range to the state of Minnesota. And a cyber range is like a flight simulator for cybersecurity. You don't fly into a thunderstorm for the first time in an actual airplane. You practice it on a flight simulator so that you know how to respond. Well, this is what a Cyber Range is for cybersecurity. And, you know, again, our overall goal for this is to really act as a node for connecting all the different pockets of excellence that exist within the state already, to act as a clearinghouse for distributing information, curriculum, threats out to the various academic partners, but then also to our business and government partners. And we're building these relationships already. We have our advisory board going. We have a number of chief information security officers from major corporations in the state on board with this, actively partnering with the National Guard. So we have a lot of momentum at Metropolitan State, again, acting as a clearinghouse for a institute that is designed to look outward to Greater Minnesota. I myself am a product of Greater Minnesota. I grew up in the town of Adams down near Austin, Minnesota. I'm very sensitive to the needs to be able to bring access to all of these programs to our partners outstate there. And all of the things that I've talked about, the Cyber Range and all of our training programs, are portable in the sense that we can bring our training outward. And this is going to be one of the overall goals with this initiative, is to continually build in this capacity to take what we do at Metropolitan State to the boundaries of the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. And identify yourself and then proceed to it.
My name is Faisal Kaleem. I'm an associate professor at the Computer Science Department of Metropolitan State University. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for inviting us over here. My dean, Kyle Swanson, actually has provided a good picture about what we're looking for. But I'm going to just add a few items over here. I moved from Florida in 2014, and at that time, what Dean Swanson mentioned, Florida governor gave $20 million to the University of Florida to develop a similar institute. So I had a small role in that, but I brought this vision to the state of Minnesota, that I wanted to develop the same institute for the state of Minnesota over here. When I joined Metro State in 2014, there was only one course in cybersecurity. And when I look at the curriculum, I said, my God, you know, I mean, what we are doing, I mean, we are the home of top 20, top 15, Fortune 500 companies, and nobody talks about cybersecurity at all for the state of Minnesota. So this is where, you know, I, you know, came up with the vision. And throughout my vision, my dean, my administrators, my president, the provost, they fully supported my idea. So the idea, as Kyle mentioned, is Mint Cyber, it will be the statewide entity, a focal point for the state of Minnesota, not only for training and education, but also for research. We need heavy research in the area of cybersecurity, forensics, and IoT. You probably have heard a few days ago some vulnerability or some attack happens against some medical devices with Medtronic. Again, think about it. Cybersecurity, when it comes to cybersecurity, the number one goal of cybersecurity is not to protect your valuable asset. The number one goal of cybersecurity is to protect human life. So think about if somebody is using a insulin system and that is connected with the network. And nowadays, the new insulin system, they could be controlled by the doctor to adjust the dosage. Now imagine if somebody is able to hack into the insulin meter, and that happened already, you know, they could severely damage the person, okay? It could cause death. So, again, the vision is to establish Mint Cyber, a statewide institute. We receive grants. Again, as I said, I am a faculty member. As a faculty member, I can only go after certain grants. I was successful enough to get grant from National Science Foundation. I was successful enough to got a grant from National Security Agency. And because of this grant, we are able to provide free training, approximately $14,000 per student in cybersecurity, okay, that we are providing for these 80, 90 individuals who are veterans, who are women, who are, underrepresented minorities. So as a faculty member, I can go after these grants. We just received the word that we are receiving another $500,000, hopefully, from National Science Foundation to develop what we call a pathway curriculum in cybersecurity. And the idea about the pathway curriculum is, we typically focus on college level, higher education. We simply miss out the K-12. And this is the reason most of the time we leave behind the students who have focused in STEM. Okay, most of the students at the K-12 level, They are interested, but there is no proper guidance for them. And this is the reason, you know, what we're going to do with this $500,000 grant from NSF. We're going to develop a pathway curriculum all the way from K to the graduate degree. So that's just one example. And again, as I said, that the research is one important aspect. We would like to invite Medtronic. They can just bring, you know, their devices. We can put those devices in our cyber range that Kyle mentioned. It's a $1.5 million equipment that we receive. It's something which only few states in the United States have. You know, you can count them on the finger, probably Michigan, Maryland, you know, only like 10 states. And Minnesota is now one of those luckiest states who joined the race. So cyber range basically raised our profile, you know, very high. All we can request over here is that, again, I can go after the national funding, the state funding, but this is the first time I'm appearing over here, and we want to request, you know, to help us when it comes to, you know, implement the Min Cyber Institute. Thank you very much.
Okay. Representative Schultz, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I want to thank Representative Albright and Representative Pawlowski for bringing this bill forward. I know we hear from our own state agencies that we have a lot of openings in cybersecurity, and we can't fill those positions because, one, we can't pay sufficient to compete with the market wage, and, two, we just don't have enough people trained. So I have a few questions. My first question is, does this compete with the St. Cloud University cybersecurity program, and are you partnering with them in any way?
We are active collaborators. Indeed, next week we're going to be having a curriculum development meeting for these grants that we've been talking about. We're building, again, through the Minnesota State IT Center for Excellence, which is really a clearinghouse for all of the Minnesota State institutions. We're going to be collaborating to build statewide curriculum modules that can be used anywhere. So we are by no means, in fact, St. Cloud State is again, one of the lead faculty members on that initiative is a St. Cloud State faculty member. So we are very much collaborators. We are not competing in any sense. There's no space for competing when the demand is this high. You know, there's so much demand, so much need for cybersecurity trained individuals that we have to work together. We have to leverage the separate talents that we have at the various campuses to truly build something that's remarkable.
And if I may add something.
Mr. Clean.
Ben Cyber is not a institute for Metro State. Min Cyber is a statewide entity. So if you look at the Min Cyber website, you would see the logo of Metro State over there. You would also see the logo of IT Center of Excellence. And in the future, we're going to be adding all these, you know, logos from St. Cloud, Mankato, and so on. So again, we are not competing. As Kyle mentioned, we are collaborating. They have their degrees. We are also coming up with our bachelor's and master's degree and so on. As a matter of fact, we have just introduced our cybersecurity minor last fall, and all of a sudden, you know, our enrollment is very, very high. So again, we are not competing, we are collaborating.
Mm-hmm. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have any indication from NSF how long they'll be able to fund these scholarship grants for students?
You mean the scholarship for service?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can I ask? Answer? Okay. So the scholarship for service grant, I think it's for initially 3 years, and then if they can ask for extension, it's totally up to the NSF to actually grant that extension. But having said that, the $500,000 that we are about to receive is also from the scholarship for service, but the second part, which is what we call the capacity building. We are intending to apply for the scholarship for service grant next year. And the reason why I waited up till this far, because I want to showcase what we got at Metro State, like the cyber range and all these capacity building curriculum. And then we're going to go after the, you know, the multi-million dollar cyber scholarship for service grant.
We're also submitting
Mr.
other
Swanson.
Grants to the to NSF as well. We have just finished up a grant to what's called the S-STEM program, $1 million that will fund 60 cybersecurity-related scholarships. And these are going to be coupled with this high-fidelity training that these students can get from the range so that when they walk out the door with a degree, they can move immediately into a high-paying job without any...
And Mr. Chair, may I say one more thing?
Yes, Ms. Colleen.
We also submitted... a $200,000 grant to Minnesota DEED, is it $200,000, mm-hmm. to actually train 60 female students only. Because we figured out that cybersecurity has a big diversity issue. Female or the women think that cybersecurity is a man-based field or man-oriented field, and they are discouraged to come into the cybersecurity. So this particular grant that we just applied for and received some indicators that hopefully we get funded, if we get this grant funded, we're going to be training 60 to 80 female-only students in the area of cybersecurity.
Representative Schultz.
Okay, last question. Thank you for those responses. Are you looking to match this $5 million from private donors or from non-state funds at all?
Mr. Swanson.
We have already, we're very active in this space already. The $1.5 million in-kind joint venture that we signed with Elbit Systems of America is a representative of that, and the fact that we've been able to spin this up to the point where it will be actually ready to go next week, you know, indicates the seriousness and the ability of our group to execute. We are in constant talks with other organizations. We have at this moment at least one potential partner who is willing to come in and fund somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 million as well. So we have many, many, you know, once this thing gets rolling, we fully expect that there's going to be a lot of interest outside, not only for traditional sort of capital investments, but also for supporting training for people. So we have very good indications that there's going to be a significant amount of funds that are going to flow toward this.
And if I may add, sir.
Caitlin, yes?
As Kyle mentioned, that we have an advisory board, and we are only focusing on the CISOs. So far, the CISO of Medtronic, CISO of Fairview, Minute, okay, and a couple of other CISOs already have signed up, you know, to become the advisory board. The reason to bring CISOs on the advisory board is to also go after some possible matching.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Price.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Some of those questions I had before that you've already answered. And first to say thank you for the work that you're doing and the enthusiasm that you bring to it.
Thank you very much.
It makes it, gives us lots of encouragement and optimism, even as we identify that this is a tremendous issue. What I would like to understand is, in essence, so we have $5 million in the bill. Is that enough? Is it just getting you started? Is it, especially when we benchmark $20 million that Florida has given.
Yep.
Or would this be like, well, $5 million will begin to address what needs to be done, and then there'll need to be more funding after that?
Dean Swanson.
From the capital side, the $5 million, we have a space in our new main hall that looks out over downtown that has been identified as an old cafeteria space, and we will do a conversion on that and bring it up to complete, you know, what's called secure compartmentalized information facility.
SCIF.
SCIF. So we'll bring it up to complete, you know, basically military grade level. So that amount of funding, at least for the time being, is enough on the capital side. The operations side, we're viewing this as a seed investment with the idea that 3 to 5 years down the road, we're going to be coming up with business models that will actually allow this to ultimately become self-sustaining. We are very big into the public-private partnership, not only for the funding end of things, but for the idea that when you're connected very tightly with the private sector, it forces you to play the game a lot better than if you are just an academic institution that's in a silo. Mm-hmm. So we're very interested in building business models that can actually return and ultimately get us to the point where we're self-sustaining. And, you know, again, the estimate on that is going to be 3 to 5 years, depending, and again, if we're taking contracts from the state to do election monitoring or other things like this, that's a different thing entirely. But from the overall appropriations end of things, we anticipate 3 to 5 years we will be self-sustaining.
If I may say something,
mm-hmm.
I am a person who always aim high. He always calls me crazy. but craziness is where, you know, it takes me to this level.
It's necessary sometimes.
Thank you. So absolutely what Kyle mentioned is important, but definitely as a state of Minnesota and as the honorable representative, you would definitely want to see a big building, okay, dedicated to the state of the whole security, cybersecurity. But having said that, obviously this is 3 to 5 years down the road, we have to prove to you guys that, hey, what if you're investing in us, you know, there is going to be some sort of positive outcome. We are going to establish what we call a security operations center on campus. Now, this is a model that nobody has done before. And the reason why, you know, I have a very, very, you know, excellent, you know, feeling about this model is that two things. First of all, the SOC is not going to be managed by the university. SOC is going to run by a totally third party. But the beauty of this thing is that SOC is going to provide security services or managed security services to a nonprofit organization, maybe the state government, okay, private, small to mid-sized businesses. And we're going to have full-time staff. It's going to run 24/7. It's going to generate revenue, okay? But the beauty of this thing is that the students who are in the program, they are going to be also present in that SOC. So Kyle talks about workforce development. So what a beautiful and natural and organic way to actually provide some real hands-on training while the revenue is being generated. Mm-hmm. So the SOC will generate the revenue. Kyle, I did not even mention this thing, but we just had a request from National Guard to provide security training. You know that National Guard basically is the 19th in Minnesota. National Guard is the 19th in the nation who has received what we call a cyber protection team, CPT. So right now they are starting with four. They're going to grow to 38 by year 2021. They are going to act like a first responder when it comes to the cyber security breaches. So they are requesting training. As a matter of fact, General Jensen, who is the Adjutant General of National Guard, a few weeks ago, he actually visited Metro State, and he was also very excited about, you know, because it's basically a collaborative, you know, effort over here. It's not Metro State, it's not National Guard, it's not Target. Everybody is in there. So, ma'am, to answer your question, there are possibility of generating revenue to self-sustain it. But we definitely will need some help in the future as well.
Representative Pryor.
And I have a separate follow-up question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, when you recruit students and accept students, do you have special criteria for someone that's going to go into cybersecurity so that we can be secure in the people that you train for cybersecurity?
Yeah. Okay, so...
If you can kind of kneel down to the mic, sure. And then, again, just reintroduce yourself.
Sure. This is Mike Woolbrink, and I'd like to have a shot at answering your question. The SOC that we're going to be establishing, the Secure Operations Center, is something you would normally see with, you know, the screens and the different computers and everything monitoring and monitoring the different attacks. One of the advantages of what we're putting together in this is our partnership with an Israeli company, several Israeli companies, actually, that are the best that I've ever seen. They have far beyond the average background checks for screening cyber operations center candidates, in addition to cyber training. And I'd like to elaborate on that for just one second. As the entity who's going to be running the SOC and working with all the different ones, I was at Medtronic with their CISO yesterday morning. We met with the National Guard yesterday afternoon. There are two different types of candidates that you want for cyber training. One happens to be the, if you will, the beat cop who's really good at walking around and checking all the doors and making sure that everything's secure. That type of profile comes out in the screening that we're going to be doing. The other one happens to be the airborne ranger that wants to attack in from the outside all the time and is more of a red team type of player. And the screening that we're going to be doing is taken directly from curriculum that Representative Albright and I witnessed in Israel in December. And we're going to be able to leverage that, not have to reinvent the wheel, use the best of the breed that is being done, and use that type of screening criteria in what we're putting together. This is far beyond just average background checks and things like that, because if we were ever to be asked by an organization such as this, you'd want to make sure that the people you entrusted your data with absolutely were far beyond the 7 years and all the other types of things. Does that answer your question, ma'am?
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Come on down. All right. Representative Pryor, is that it? Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Chair. For either of the testifiers, you mentioned about maybe having somebody out of right out of the high school that you might be able to recruit. And I'm just curious, starting with a high school student, How long would it maybe take to go through their training and their classes? And with that, without the grants and the stuff that we have, when we talk about the to fund some of the schooling, what would roughly be the cost to a student looking at something like that?
I didn't swap that one. One of the beauties of cybersecurity is that it's very much a laddered career path. So a student, for example, can come go into an associate's degree program at one of our community college partners and leave with a number of industry-recognized certifications, 2 years, relatively minimal cost. So, you know, $12,000, you know, total tuition plus the cost of actually doing the certifications. That's going to get them in as an entry-level analyst. And then once they're in a career, then organizations are very interested in supporting the development of their employees. And one of the beauties of this cyber range that we're talking about, it is a complete vertical ladder all the way from entry-level analyst through an engineer to a manager to, you know, the top level as far as that's concerned. So that's the technical side. And then the flip side is that we are developing programs to be very intentional about the soft skills. The ability to communicate in particular is one that is stunningly important for cybersecurity personnel, simply because they have to communicate threats to their managers, to their CEOs in some effective fashion. So, I mean, cybersecurity is very much a type of career path that requires continual training because the threat constantly is evolving. And so the overall cost to get in is not massive for a student. And this is one of the things that gives us hope from a workforce perspective. If we can figure this out, if we can get rid of these barriers, then we can bring a lot of good people into these careers very quickly.
Thank you.
Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Chair. Especially thank you to Representative Albright and Plowski for bringing the bill forward. That sounds like a real opportunity for kids to get into a field. And, you know, if they like it, they like it. But only spend 2 years at a maybe a technical college with very small debt. Some can go through that with no debt if they're living at home, and then get into something that they can work their way up the ladder and more training, more money, basically. And it sounds like a very, very good program. And thank you so much for your testifiers.
Thanks, sir.
Next up, Representative Jessup.
Thank you, Chair. To the testifiers, question is, if we do this in the state of Minnesota, what activities are occurring in this particular field in the other Midwest states around us? Is there any activity that is going on? And I would say not only North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, Wisconsin, but also let's include Chicago or Illinois.
Representative Albright, are you?
He's back.
You're back.
Mr. Chair, I think the path of and the line of questioning leads me to want to introduce you to a very special guest of mine. I first met this gentleman in Israel in November, and he literally made me realize the severity and the stark nature of our security when it comes to cybersecurity. So I will allow him to introduce himself, but I think the point that I'd like for him to make is just the stark reality that we face as a state, as a nation, and what he has seen with some of his projects around the globe, and how he has allowed others to benefit from the expertise that he and his organizations can provide.
Welcome to St. Paul and the Committee on Higher Education.
Thank you very much. My name is Ronen Almog, and I'm coming from a small country in the Middle East that recently we got the capital, thanks to you guys, called Israel, and the recognition of Jerusalem. But I will take you to a very serious matter that unfortunately I'm living on a daily basis, and it's cybersecurity. So now it's becoming a very famous issue. Before, it's used to call IT security, and now we got a new word for it that it might make it more interesting, is cyber. Myself, I'm part of a company that operates in almost 48 countries. Some of them I can mention to you is Japan. In Europe, we operate in Germany, in Spain, Italy, even in the UK. And I think the perspective that we are seeing for the US, it should be the more important things for me personally, and also for Israel as a country. So before we are operating in any country, we have to get permissions to the technology that we are going to share with you guys, because we're bringing assets that belong to a country that actually is suffering from a daily basis massive attacks. Even the great U.S. doesn't suffer the quantities and the qualities of attack that the country of Israel suffers on a daily basis. I just shared with you yesterday night. A week ago, we got maybe one of the most sophisticated attack was ever seen on some of our hospitals. The basic of the attack was coming from a state funding country. I will not go into politics now, but you know, we have a lot of friends in our neighborhood, so you can guess who could be. But the particular of the attack was that I promise you that if this attack was directed to any other country, there were people dying like mosquitoes there. Because what they did, they sent a very sophisticated, I will call it virus, just to make it simple, that was affecting all the breathing machines that connecting to computers. Because today all the breathing machines are connected to computers. And they could manipulate different types of specifications in the machine activity. Now, one of the hospitals that was getting it was a geriatric hospital that having about 800 people, elderly people from 70 and on. Now, I can tell you that this attack was really hurt, I mean, was touching us as human beings, because these guys out there doesn't play games. They want to kill people in a different way. You're familiar with the Iraq war, with the other wars, the weapons, airplanes. My friends, this is a different war. You don't see it, you don't understand it, suddenly it's coming, and I'm sure you will hear about ransomwares. I remember not long ago in the U.S. you had election and you had some stories about it. I don't know what's wrong, what's true and what's wrong, but so it's very important issue. I want to take you one step further. We are coming here with a pure intention to build together something with the guys with Metro University. We are bringing all our capabilities. And when I say all, I mean all. I got a full permit to bring the best, first of all, expertise and experience. That's what more counts for us. Technology you can buy everywhere. But human capabilities and expertise, a little bit different to get. So we're going to deal with knowledge transfer, with knowledge, with sharing of knowledge together with the people, and all these brain capabilities will create a great facility that first of all will help to the students to get hands-on experience. That's where we're coming from. Sorry for the diploma guys. You forgive me for a second. We love diplomas, but we are coming from hands-on experience. Our guys, you ask a very interesting question. So my guys, I'm father for four daughters, and they are already identified when they are 16 years old. Their parents sign for a special program for cyber education. Until they are 18, they are already belong to the Israeli Defense Forces, but they don't know. They're enjoying it. For them, it's a game. And they're studying. They are 18, they're already joined to the elite A200 cyber forces unit. And then they are protecting a nation on the daily basis. So they are acquiring a massive experience. When they are 22, because they are going for a 5-year program in the military, what they know when they are 22, a veteran of, I don't want to compare, but the leading cyber organization outside, maybe will know when he's 40 years old. Because these guys are dealing on a daily basis with saving a nation, and they are suffering from different type of vertical attacks and malwares. So actually, and I can share with them what we are doing now in New York.
Yes.
Just to give you an example, and I will not use any name or... But we have some good clients here, and recently we just, it was Saturday, we started an operation for one of the biggest banks in the U.S. as a client, and the bank recently invested $100 million in empowering and hardening its security posture, and the CISO of the bank told us, we are five people in the team that are doing the work in New York. And he told us, I know you are very good people, but you know we recently invested $100 million. And he was a little bit teasing us. Took us 2 hours to take a full control of the bank. Wait, let me finish. 1 hour 58 minutes exactly. In the 1 hour 58 minutes, we sent him. It was Sunday because we know that we operate on Saturday and Sunday to do the exercises. I sent him a screenshot of a bank transfer of $50 million from his own SWIFT system, and I asked him, "Do you want me to enter? To press enter?" The guy he was living is New York. His headquarters is in Jersey. He came in about 1 hour in Sunday, and he told me, "You guys are very unique." I told him, "We are not unique. We're just more experienced." So this is the game we are. Now, I think you guys have a huge opportunity because we will come and others also will come. And I think sharing between so important countries that are so close one to each other. You know, I think that what Israel and the U.S. have, nobody else in the world have. And we should keep it and even empower it. And that's a great way to do it. Sharing knowledge, sharing expertise and experience, and make it happen for everybody.
Well, thank you. Great presentation. Could I get you to repeat your name, please, slowly?
Ronen Almog.
Okay.
R-O-N-E-N A-L-M-O-G.
Yeah, I got the spelling. I just wasn't sure of the pronunciation.
Sorry, apologize.
And we may have a question or two. I'm not sure.
I'd be more than happy to answer.
Representative Daniels, were you finished? Or Jessup, you were done? Okay. And we're moving on to Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question is more directed at Metro State or even Min State. I see some folks are here from Minnesota State. I mean, we all have to be taking this issue very, very seriously. I mean, it's 2018. For us to be slipping or slacking in any way on cybersecurity is just unacceptable. I mean, this is going to impact from the state perspective, intact citizens' data, or impact citizens' data, impact possibly voter rolls, elections. I mean, this is very serious things we're talking about. I do want to ask, though, why this is not included in the system's budget request, and why this is, it looks to me at least, it's separate from the budget request. Is the campus working with the system on this program or on this mission? And then, you know, I guess if Minnesota State does want to make some comments just about how they feel about this in retrospect or in respect to their budget request.
Dean Swanson?
I can't speak for the system in any way, shape, or form. The system does support this in the sense that they are funding currently $300,000 worth of curriculum development efforts toward this initiative. I view this, and again, this is now where I put my... I view this as being very different from sort of a typical traditional system budget request in the sense that, again, this is something that really is a true statewide workforce development that sort of lies outside of the sort of traditional means of putting budget requests in that are typically focused on an individual campus. You know, we want to build a building. We want to start a program that's very much localized. We are trying to build something here that is very unique. And the second thing is that we've really gotten momentum behind this in the past 6 months, and the time scale for the system budget requests is significantly longer than that. And that's all that I can say from that perspective.
Representative Albright.
Thank you. Representative Lean, to your question, and I think this is where the responsibility and or the duty of this committee really comes squarely into focus. We are charged with appropriating and making sure that the priorities of not only the Minsky system but of the state are taken care of in a manner that is forward-looking. One could argue that this is not historical in nature. I readily understand that I'm going outside. I'm coloring out the lines, if you will. But I will also remind people of our permanent rules and invoke Rule 4.12, where several biennia ago, a member actually put into permanent rules the discretion and the opportunity for a committee appropriating money to determine the prioritization of the requests made of that committee. I think Representative Pawlowski also spoke to that at a recent committee hearing where we talked about the prioritization of the needs of the various campuses. I'm not here to disparage the requests of either the Minsky system or others, but I am saying that time is of the essence with this request. You spoke very well to the very nature of why this is needed and why it is needed now. If we wait until the next biennium, if there's an attack or an intrusion upon the data, what this state holds, who is held accountable for not recognizing the need and acting upon it in a pressing nature? That's not to scare anyone. That is just a fact. So I thank you for the question.
I don't know if anyone else wants to comment. Representative Lane, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess I would kind of like to hear from the system as to what their comments are toward the request and toward the bill.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor of Finance for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I'm delighted to be here, and I'm really glad that I heard the presentation. I thought it was a really terrific presentation, powerful testimony. Thank you to the author for bringing this issue forward. We certainly recognize and respect the role of this legislature in establishing priorities and have our priorities in front of you for your consideration. As one of the speakers noted, we have, from your support several years ago now, Center of Excellence Resources, and the Minnesota Metro State is a center of excellence for IT and has used those resources to build out the program that was talked about here today. I think the allocation is $500,000 a year. Recall, too, we have centers of excellence for agriculture, transportation, engineering, energy programming at Minnesota West, and the Health Force program at Winona State. So we have also identified this as a priority, but as I think the question illustrates, in our supplemental budget request, we didn't speak to this program directly, nor were we made aware of this as part of the bonding program. And so you don't see it on our bonding priorities either.
Thank you. Representative Lane, do you have any additional
comments? I'm good for now.
Okay, good. Representative, thank you very much for coming down. Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Albright, a couple things. I have kind of a list, but I'm going to keep it to just a few. Number one, I'm trying to figure out how I missed out on the opportunity to travel with you and to learn more about this. And then, secondly, the testifier that spoke just a few moments ago, sorry, sir, I can't pronounce your name.
Ronan.
Yes. It's just astonishing to me that the state of Minnesota has the opportunity to collaborate with the country of Israel and to work on this issue together. Someone had suggested earlier that, or had asked the question, have we leveraged dollars to try to get the private sector to work with us on this? And I think the answer was appropriate. One of the testifiers mentioned that, yes, there are those collaborating. But what is the value of being able to capitalize, connect with the experience that you had mentioned earlier in testimony? I don't know that the value there could even be calculable, considering the work that has been done and the collaboration that could take place going forward right here in Minnesota. Well, as we were speaking, I asked my assistant to add me to the bill. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to have this come before us.
Senator Walbite.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Heintzman. I apologize for not bringing the jackets by, but I'm appreciative of your support nonetheless.
I think next time you go to Israel, he wants to go with you.
I get an inference there that he may be angling towards that, and we'll make note of that as well. To your point about the kind of the ROI, I think that what is not seen are the ripple effect of the magnitude of the jobs and the businesses that are attracted to a center of excellence such as we're describing. If you take a look at, you know, our base in technology, whether it be in med tech or otherwise, this builds out one of the most rapidly emerging growth industries on the globe. You want to talk about big data and the ramifications for making sure that we can unfortunately house it all. You want to talk about quantum computing. We can have a sidebar on that. But just alone in the security and the prevention of life and preserving of life, as was said by the testifier. That's what these two bills, in conjunction with one another, will help propel Minnesota into a leadership role in the country.
Mr. Wilbrink, did you have a comment?
I did. Sir, one of the things that makes this opportunity unique is cybersecurity is built on trust. And when Ronan and I connected several months ago, it seems almost like 2 years ago, we discovered that not only had we done some of the same training, we'd chewed some of the same dirt long ago. And when you trust somebody on that side of things, and you're willing to share that training, we were talking about exchange programs for where we send people over there and they bring people over here to do these types of things. It's very exciting to me to know that we're not going to just train everything that's in the book. We can train all of the other stuff because the bad guys don't follow the book. And this gives us the opportunity to be able to do that.
Just want to add something.
Of course, my friend.
Sorry. What we are doing here, we don't do nowhere in the world. Nowhere.
Could you reintroduce yourself again? I can't pronounce your name. So
sorry, sir. What we are going to do here, my name?
Yes.
You can call me Happiness. I think it would be very good.
I think
that's the way my mother called me, so.
Good looking. Goes too, huh?
Let's make it very simple.
Okay.
So
proceed.
What we are doing, what we're going to do in the state of Minnesota, we're not doing nowhere in the world. We're operating in, I mentioned, we have five companies in around the world, in Japan, Germany. They're also very respectful countries. But what we are bringing to you and what we bring with us and what we will get together and create a value together, I call it 1+1, making year 3, doesn't 2. And this is what it's a very unique thing. And I know it's very difficult to explain it unless you want to go into the bits and bytes, and I will be more than happy to share. But whenever this program will be work and your guys will go through that, they will expose to things that existing, sorry to say, only in Israel. Only in Israel, with all the respect to the United States of America, and I love your country. You don't have it. And it's coming only from a place of experience and expertise, not because we are smarter. We are not, believe me. We're just trying harder. And we have a great, we're living in a unique neighborhood. So the neighborhood makes us better. And it's a matter of life, you know, that's what I'm trying to explain. We're dealing in cybersecurity as a matter of life. If they will take our shelter of our electricity, or they will hurt our hospitals, it will kill my own people, and I will not let nobody to touch my own people in my country. That's it.
We appreciate your country, too. I should add that.
And by the way, you are welcome to come to visit in Israel. All of you, by the way.
You want to invite family?
It's a lot, no.
Representative Heitzman.
Yes, follow-up. Thank you. To Representative Albright, or to Happiness, whatever the case. Trying to figure out this, I mean, clearly this is sensitive information that you would be sharing, teaching. I'm sure this has already been thought of, and I'm not sure what precautions may or may not be taken to be careful who enters this program.
So I think my colleague already explained, and we're bringing from Israel the methodologies for choosing the people. Have a full trust in my team members from the university that they will follow all the methodologies of choosing the right people for the program. I got a full clearance from where I'm coming from to share these things. If not, I was not sitting here in an official hearing in the United States of America. So everything is clear from our side. And I believe that we are also doing a big breakthrough because, as my colleague Mike said, it's a matter of trust, and we're going to share with you everything we have. That's not something that I think you should understand what's behind it. And please God, if it's happened and everything go well by the program, You will come to visit, and you will understand it when you will see it.
Actually, I brought the...
I brought a film. I brought you several films to see, but I don't think it's the right place to show it.
Mr. Chair, we can share those via connection YouTube video links.
Can I ask?
Okay.
Yes. Mr. Chair, can I add?
Sure. Mr. Kaleen? Kaleen? Yeah.
Kaleen. Kaleen. So I'm not a beautiful face, but but my name is Faisal Kaleem again. So I just want to give two examples over here regarding the criteria that you're asking, and that's a very, very important question, because we don't want to recruit somebody that who's going to get trained and then, you know, come back to us, okay, and play the game against us. So when it comes to the NSF Scholarship for Service Program, there are some set criteria. And one of the criteria is definitely they have to be a U.S. citizen and permanent resident of the United States. And secondly, when it comes to the SFS, when we pick the students, you know, there is a one-to-one interview session as well when it comes to the Scholarship for Service Program. And this is where we have the opportunity to, you know, find out some sort of behavior, you know, and so on. Now, for the NSA grant that we just got and we are using for training the veterans, obviously, you know, they are veterans, they are active duty military officers over there in that program, but the participants who are neither veterans or not active duty, we actually had some criteria for them. So definitely, once again, they had to be U.S. citizens or permanent resident of the United States. We came up with some multiple choice questions. They have to answer those questions before they can join the program. And then, because my focus was, you know, for females and for underrepresented, you know, minorities. So basically, I was, you know, a little biased toward, you know, those participants as well. But definitely, we use some criteria. And again, in the future, we will develop, you know, some of the stringent criteria like NSF, you know, uses for their Scholarship for Service program. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Albright, and to all the testifiers. Thank you for your testimony. I must say I did not realize the extent of this issue until I heard all the testimony, and I want to just ask a couple clarifying questions, and more or less out of interest, but there was the statement made that if the attacks are happening in Israel happened to any other country, those other countries would have suffered greatly. And I just want to make sure that I understand that that would include the U.S., that would include Minnesota. So really, this is incredibly timely. We need to act. And with regard to Israel partnering with Minnesota, the state of Minnesota, I understood this is unique. No, this isn't happening in any other state. And maybe this was stated, why start here? And was it just the unique relationship because Representative Albright visited Israel? Or, I mean, it's amazing. I'm very thankful. But it just wondering.
That's not a shock. That's understandable. But
I view the relationship between the state of Minnesota and the state of Israel as a very special one. And I treat that relationship with high regard, but I also recognize that the state of Israel is a startup nation that has an incredible innovative gene pool or DNA ability. What they're looking for are brothers and sisters who align with those same ideals that can bring that technology and those innovative ideas to the United States. The relationship that the gentleman behind me and I have struck up is one that I hold very dear, and I think that that just is an inference in terms of how important we view the work that we would like to bring to Minnesota on behalf of the state of Minnesota's citizens.
Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Albright. I'm very excited to see what will happen. I really appreciate your answer, and I will just say to the folks here from Israel as well, if there's anything more we can do to bless Israel as they're blessing us, please don't hesitate to let us know.
Any other questions from members? Excellent presentation.
Thank you.
Representative Albright, you have anything final here?
Mr. Chair, I think all that needs to be said at this juncture has been said.
We sometimes invite people from the audience too, if they happen to have
if they wish to say. But I say anything on behalf.
Just for it, I'll ask. Mm-hmm. But I don't see any.
Mr. Chair.
Response.
I have one of this current student who is participating in our cybersecurity program at the moment. So if Joanne, you can please come in and make some statement.
Yeah, we have time if you'd like to make some comments, but you'll have to go down in front here.
Hi, my name is Joanne Smith. I'm a student at Metro State. I graduated originally with a computer forensics degree. I was picked up pretty quickly for cybersecurity, and there were a few skills gaps. So I jumped back into Faisal's program to fill in some of those gaps, and it's working well.
Very good.
Do you have any questions for me?
And so you're in the program right now, you said?
I am, yes.
And that goes, when will you finish?
I believe it ends at the end of August.
Okay.
There will be four certifications that come out of it, security certifications.
All right.
So I'm currently in cybersecurity for Xcel Energy in the nuclear division. You might tell I'm not used to
that. Was my question, whether you're working now or will be, but that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also came out of a healthcare cybersecurity situation.
Oh. Wow.
So.
Sounds like a pretty secure way of life. I mean, for you.
I like it.
So thank you for coming down.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
That.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to lay over House File 3639. And I'd also like to make another motion to lay over House File 3644. And I'd like to thank the Chair's indulgence for the time during this committee hearing and for the robust nature of the conversation with the committee members. Thank you.
Okay. All right, very good. And with that, members, we are adjourned.